Hello everyone, welcome to the Legal Wolf podcast. Legal Wolf is an initiative by Steve Lawler, who is a mental health lawyer in the UK. And today I have with me Asavadi Soni, who is also a mental health lawyer based in India. And she's also practicing as a yoga trainer and she's certified for it. So with all these achievements, I am very much looking forward to talk to her. So Asavadi, you can introduce yourself to our audience about how you started as a mental health practitioner and being a yoga trainer.
Hi Priyanka, good afternoon, and thank you for a lovely introduction. Well, I actually got into the field of mental health law after almost a year and a half after my graduation. I was on the verge of quitting law, in fact. I was not very sure if I want to continue with the profession. And I came, you know, upon this subject material under the law. And the reason that I was so enthusiastic about it is because I am someone who has lived with depression and anxiety for over 6 years now. And there is a great deal of involvement that I saw of myself in a field of law as mental health law. And I felt very connected to it. And it did, of course, it also gave me, and this is only from my perspective, it did give me a sense of direction and purpose, given that, you know, I had gone to 5 years of law school, I had been living with these mental health conditions. So it kind of felt like a calling to me. So which is why I took up, you know, mental health law as a specialization, and it's something that I've been focusing my complete energy on for over 2 years now. But before, you know, mental health law came onto the scene for me, actually, even as a law student, as someone with lived experience, I was not aware that this branch of law existed. And in early 2019, in fact, I decided to go public with my journey of, you know, how I had been through depression and anxiety, was going through it. I was also on psychiatric medication. And I just felt that I want to go public with this message. And I did. And I think that is where somewhere the advocacy part of it started for me. When I started speaking about my own experiences, I started doing research about mental health. I started spreading mental health awareness, and I kind of made it my goal to normalize speaking about mental health and mental illness as much as possible. So I think advocacy started earlier for me. Mental health law came a bit later. When you asked me about yoga, I graduated from law school in the summer of 2018, and that was a period when I was kind of trying to figure out, am I still connected with the law? What do I really want to do after these 5 years that I had invested in law school? And I was dabbling in a lot of different things. I was a substitute teacher in a school for some time. I did a maritime research-related internship for some time. I was kind of figuring out my life. And for a couple of years before that, my mom, who's a yoga teacher, she's been teaching for 15 years now. I was actually a part of her classes on and off. I used to attend mama's classes. And okay, like since I'm someone who's very inclined towards physicality, it's something that I enjoyed. And when I graduated, mom had an observation. She said, you know, you are quite flexible. If you are interested, why don't you try going in for a teacher's training course? And so in October of 2018, I went through a four and a half month, you know, extensive teacher training program and got myself certified as a yoga practitioner. And it's actually during that process of, you know, daily practice and studying about yoga that I really fell in love with it as, you know, the form that it is today for me. So that's how, and then I've been teaching yoga since 2019. So I have been making an effort to balance both my career choices together, you know, being a yoga teacher as well as a lawyer who's focusing in mental health legislation.
Amazing. Like, I connect to you so much, and we have a same meeting ground. Like, I am so much into mental health, hence this podcast. And also, I've done yoga for thoda time in my life, and it was around 2019 only. Very funny that you also started training that time and teaching. So I know the course that maybe I have heard of the course that you have done, and it's, I think, in residence course where you live, where you learn. I mean,
So I did not go in for the course where you have to live at the residence. Yeah. I did one where I had to commute on a daily basis because it was very close to my home. So I used to go every day in the morning and then come back in the late afternoon. So that was my routine.
Yeah. For those who don't know, it's a rigorous course. Even your diet, they are very particular about what you eat, and you know, it is so difficult. And people from all over the world come to these institutions because India is a yoga hub. Oh my God. And people who have, Indians have a diet where, you know, our body is very tight from inside. Like what we eat has made our body like that we can't bend a lot because of the fats and everything that we consume. And people who come from outside India, they don't have so much oil or fat in their food. So they are quite easy on the, spiceless diet. But for Indians, it is very difficult. So it totally, she has worked her literally heart out when she got that certificate. I can totally imagine. So congratulations on that. And like when you said you went to depression and anxiety, I feel the biggest, as somebody who has been through that and has asked for help, it's been very difficult. How did you ask for help? And how difficult was it for you to ask for help in the first place?
That's actually a lovely question, Priyanka. So in April of 2015, that is the period, and again, just a trigger warning I'm issuing out for anyone who's listening to this podcast or maybe struggling with their mental health, that I will be talking a little bit in depth about my experience. So if it's something that you find triggering, you can tune out for some time. Or maybe just prepare yourself mentally to listen to what we're going to discuss. So I actually had my first panic attack in April of 2015. And it's a very scary experience. It's very surreal. And I actually had never experienced anything like this before. Like it's not that I had struggled, or maybe in the background, I was probably struggling for a while. It just never became something this big. So when I did have my first panic attack, I didn't know what to do with myself. I didn't know what were these feelings that I was, you know, experiencing, palpitations, shortness of breath, and, you know, throwing up, things like that. And I think by God's grace, I was at home at that time. We had a holiday period going on from college, and I was at home. And all of this kind of happened in front of my parents. And my mom struggled with depression and anxiety about 8 to 10 years before that, before my episode. So when she saw what had happened, and she was like, I was trying to explain to her, she understood what this might be. So that night, I just, you know, after speaking to her, she didn't say anything to me, in fact, that night. And the next morning when I woke up, like something had just turned off inside. And when I woke up, my mom just told me, listen, do you want to go and seek professional help? Because this could be a psychiatric issue. I think there is, and I see benefit in the fact that even though I come from a very open household, we had never discussed mental health before. So because of that, I did not have any preconceived notions. There was actually no stigma, no taboo. I just said yes. I didn't even give it a second's thought. And I said, okay, let's go. And I think that is the point from which my journey in mental health started. And I am very grateful that, you know, I had someone with lived experience in my house, because she identified it before I could even process what was happening with me. So before I could even say, you know, maybe I need to ask for help, within a couple of hours, my mom did the needful. She just asked me, like, do you want to go? And I think that's the best possible outcome that I could see happening for me at that point of time. Because, you know, had I sat and tried to research about what I was going through or decided not to take help from my parents, I think I would have struggled for a lot longer and the process would have been very, very difficult for me. So I am very blessed that I got help at the earliest possible opportunity. I was able to access that help. But that being said, it hasn't been a rosy journey. Accepting help is a huge step. But, you know, having to actually go through what you're going through and deal with it on an everyday basis, it does become easier to manage, but I wouldn't say it becomes easier to go through. So, yeah, I mean that, but yes, help was readily available and something that I accessed within a few hours, within 24 hours of my first panic attack.
That's lovely. And, you know, a lot of people who are listening might not know that you and I are speaking for the second time in our lives. We've never spoken ever before.
Yes.
But I'm very grateful that we are talking about this because I've had like 3-4 people coming. So many guests, like I told you before, the podcast have come, right? Each and every one of them remember the date, time, month, year of the panic attack.
Yes.
They never forget it. Even I remember my day of the most worst panic attack, like nobody ever forgets it because it has that psychological traumatic impact on your mind. And I'm so proud of your mom that she took you to she didn't ask you or judge you for it, you know, like she empathized with you. Okay. You know, okay. I understand what you're going through. And it takes a lot for a person who has received help to see someone they love go through the same.
Yeah.
Like it was not only it was her own daughter, you know, it was not anybody else. Instead of blaming herself that what did I do wrong, she took it like, you know, no, we'll fix this together. Let's go.
Right.
And when you said managing part, I related so much because when you're seeking help, you have so much clarity on the situation, but you still fall back to the old patterns of your problem.
Yes.
And that guilt, oh my God, I am seeking help. I'm letting my therapist or my psychiatrist down and I'm doing the same thing that I used to do before my illness. I mean, everything is sort of so much dialogue is going on, but you know, I'm so happy that you have overcome that and you're still overcoming it, I feel, and side by side, you know, taking measures to help others also, which is really great. Kudos to you and your mom. I would really love to congratulate her in person that, you know, she has done such a huge, amazing job. I can't think of my parents just thinking on their feet of let us take her to someone, you know, who can help. That has come from the communities of internet that I learned or went through. Okay, if this happens, I need to talk to a therapist. So yeah, very few parents understand that. So that's great.
Thank you.
So about yoga, I have realized that a huge part of mental health well-being is exercising.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a constant loop that because you are depressed or anxious, your brain thinks that you are sick and you can't move out of your body. But the most you need to do is get out of your bed and move because of those chemicals, happy hormones that your brain releases when you're working out.
Right.
So tell us something about that. And how did yoga help you recover and come through whatever you were going through at that point?
So I will not credit yoga as a recovery step for me because I think the, you know, 95% of my healing has happened through therapy and medication. That is the model that worked best for me and it's still going on right now as well. So I have immense faith in, you know, mental health professionals that I consult in and the medications that I have seen over years that work for me, you know, the combination and the dosage that works for me. So that is something that I have a lot of faith in. And yoga actually became more of a stabilizing factor in my process or in my recovery. It is something that I took to purely because I was interested in the physicality aspect of it. I am someone who loves movement. It doesn't matter to me what I'm doing, whether I am playing a sport, whether I am working out on my own at home. Movement is very important and crucial to my day. And it is something that has been inculcated in me and my sibling when, you know, from a very, very young age. So I think somewhere at the back of my mind, I always knew that when I'm playing, when I'm exercising, I'm feeling better. I'm feeling good. And it's actually one of those few periods when I disconnect completely from my life situation and kind of focus on the present moment. So movement plays a very crucial role, and I'm sure for a lot of other people as well. Yoga is something that I kind of discovered more deeply when I started doing the teacher's training program. That is when I started understanding my own body and headspace better. Now, I do completely agree with the statement that yoga is for everybody. However, I will take the opportunity of, you know, being on this podcast to kind of let people be aware that if you are struggling with your mental health, it could be any mental health condition, any mental illness. If you're just starting out with your treatment or you have just received your diagnosis, you don't have to stop practicing yoga. It is very, very beneficial. But if you can, avoid closing your eyes. It is not a very great idea for someone who's feeling uncomfortable mentally to keep their eyes closed, because when we close our eyes, we tend to internalize everything. And when you're going through a process where you actually have to try and express yourself more and speak about how you are feeling, closing your eyes and shutting yourself off from the world may not be a very good idea. I have experienced episodes of anxiety numerous times during a yoga class when I have kept my eyes closed for extended periods. So it is not something that I advise. And there are a lot of psychiatrists also who say the same thing to their patients when they are starting out on their treatment. They say, do not just blindly go into meditation. It's not a very healthy practice unless you are fully aware of what you are doing. And also, you should be at a certain level of mental comfort before you get into such a deep process of introspection or, you know, looking into yourself. So that is a disclaimer that I would like to give out, and information that I think a lot of people misunderstand, because yoga is kind of equated with closing your eyes and just being on the mat, or, you know, going into long extended periods of meditation. It may work for some people, does not work for most people who are struggling with their mental health. And then they kind of blame yoga as a form of expression. They said yoga didn't suit me. In some cases, it is possible. But in many cases, I think people don't realize that when you're struggling with your mental health and you're keeping your eyes shut and forcing yourself to focus on something that probably the mind and body are not ready for at that point of time, it will make you averse to the practice. You can't make yourself like something then. So feel free to keep practicing yoga. This is for everybody. Yoga does not, at least in my experience, yoga doesn't cure a mental illness. It's not going to make your problems go away. It may make it easier to manage sometimes emergency situations of anxiety or panic that arise. It also helps you connect very deeply with your own physical body. Excellent if you're practicing pranayama or breath work. But all of these practices can be done with the eyes open. It'll have the same amount of benefit, and it'll help you to feel at ease when you're in your practice. So that is something that I would like to put out so that people are more aware about this.
Oh, wow. Like, it was, what a moment. I just went back to my classes and I realized I used to feel so exhausted. I can't tell you, after my classes, 1 hour workout, and I just can't get out of my mad. Like, I would just feel like, you know, I'm dead today. And it wasn't like that. I used to feel energized too, but a part of me just didn't feel comfortable, you know?
Yes. Yes.
It was, and now that you're saying, I realize that it was before therapy, before I started therapy, all this was happening. And sitting on the mat, keeping your eyes closed, was very uncomfortable. And just constantly looking at your body when your body is a triggering factor for you, you know?
Yeah. Like, that can be the case too sometimes.
Yeah. In yoga classes or any gym, mirror is right in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
So you are constantly seeing what. And bodies can be triggered for so many people.
Mm-hmm.
You constantly see looking at your own body, and then, and you know, your mind is constantly like, you finally, your mind has time where you're not working, so it will start saying things that you didn't get to throughout the day. But instead of listening, you are listening to your instructor's instructions, that stand straight, point your toes, you know, balance your arms. But there is so much internal conflict happening, and I couldn't ever recognize it before today. You pointed it out at why that might happen. It was amazing.
Like, in fact, Priyanka, even now, even though I have been practicing yoga for now nearly 3 years and been teaching for 2.5 years, there are still times when I don't feel completely mentally comfortable in a practice. But I think somewhere I have also learned to identify that, okay, I might be feeling mentally a certain way, that doesn't equal the physical feeling that I'm having. So actually just keeping my eyes open and continuing with my practice, engaging a little bit with my surroundings, helps me to continue the practice and feel comfortable. I enjoy my practice. But I think there are so many, there is so much myth and, you know, misunderstanding about yoga, ki agar you have not closed your eyes, you've not done your session properly. You know, people feel the need to force themselves to be uncomfortable mentally and physically so that they think, now we've done a yoga class properly. And that is not the case at all. There is a principle of yoga which is sthiram sukham asanam, which means that you should be feeling comfortable in the posture that you're doing, whatever the level might be. You know, you have to be comfortable to that level. You don't have to push yourself beyond that. Jahan par bhi aap pahunch rahe hain, you should feel comfortable there. So I think the same principle not just applies to the physical body, but your mental sense of self is as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think yoga practitioners or any practitioners who help people get physically fit need as much as emotional intelligence as a therapist or any other mental health practitioner does, because you are literally, you have that power to make someone see the way they can change their life, you know. I feel had my instructors been emotionally intelligent and used a good route for me to tell me that, you know, Priyanka, you have to work out because you love your body, not because you hate your body. Because a bit of 20 minutes good workout can make you feel good about your entire day. And that is a huge thing. Instead of saying, you know, all this fat and all this junk food. Like, we are we are in a phase of transition in our history. Every period of time will have certain goods and bad with it. Yes, we have junk food and everything today. But it also helps and sustain people who live in Bombay or Pune, you know, to eat on the run, who don't have time to sit and have a proper meal. That is why all these things have come up, right? All this culture food that we talk about. So every generation will bring something with them.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, totally. Like, please do something about this. Like, having trainers, having emotional intelligence like you. I wish I had a trainer like you. I would have done so much better in my yoga practice than otherwise.
Thank you. That's so sweet to hear. See, I, you know, with all due respect, Priyanka, it is, I think that it will be too much of pressure if we expect any physical trainer to have the same level of training as a mental health professional, you know, because the demands are too high and the results sought are also, I think, pretty different. But what you did say, definitely if there is somebody who is engaging with other people's bodies, if you're helping someone to feel good about their journey towards fitness, towards healthy living, towards their own body, which, like you very rightly pointed out, can be very triggering for some people. A certain degree of emotional quotient is required. You know, it doesn't need a training for any physical trainer to realize and understand the importance of being empathetic and sensitive, compassionate and understanding towards the clientele that's coming to you. Every person who comes to my class is seeking a different goal with their yoga practice. No two people come to a class, any class for that matter, with the same agenda on their mind. So, you know, if there are people who are selling yoga for weight loss, if there are people who are selling yoga under other gimmicks, you know, just sales gimmicks, I think that's incorrect. You should remain deeply faithful and rooted in the philosophy of yoga, in traditional yoga, understanding that the importance of yoga is far beyond the physical body, right? And I think if practitioners can use their classes to help people feel more empowered upon, you know, of their own body, to be physically stronger, to be healthier, I think those are much more sustainable goals and much bigger outcomes than making a person say that, you know, see, with 2 months of class, I made you lose these many kilos. Because yoga is not meant for weight loss. It is not meant for weight loss. Yoga has a very, very different purpose of physicality and, you know, mental well-being, and weight loss is not one of them. Following a certain kind of diet, yes, for whatever reason that a person might want to, yeah, that could be a reason why, you know, that could be a motivating factor or a reason behind a person losing weight. But joining a yoga class to lose weight is not something that I would recommend. It's not something that I would even say should be on the agenda of either the practitioner or the client. This is why I want to join. It can happen. It could be a lovely byproduct of yoga practice over some months or years, but it cannot become the primary focus of practicing yoga in the first place.
Yeah, I remember I started when I was 19, right. And even though I was so young, like now I'm 22, like it's three years back, and I was so young, yet in a gut in my voice, a gut in my body said, you know, this is not right. Like, this is not right, because I've read Bhagavad Gita and I've read Lord Krishna saying about, you know, a person who sits in peace with joining that yoga, that is yoga. There is a whole chapter in Bhagavad Gita about yoga, you know, so karma yoga and all that, people,
yes,
there is, if you have read, people who are international audience, read Bhagavad Gita, it's a beautiful, beautiful book.
Absolutely.
So yeah, and having read it so many times over, cover to cover, I realize that your intuitive voice is God's voice.
Yes.
And even though you are sitting on a mat, even though your trainer is somebody who trained from Rishikesh and came, if that person is not, if that person talking about materialistic world, then that is where itself he is wrong. Like, I have heard people, my trainers, I mean, they are my gurus, I shouldn't say these things about them, but telling the clients, you know, now your husband will like you more when you lose weight and all
these
things. That's
not right. That's not very appropriate.
It is not right. I mean, like, there are... I mean, body and mass is such an earthly thing, you know, when you are on earth, your weight is something else. You go on moon, your weight is something else. How does it matter with what your spirit? Spirit has no weight.
Correct.
Spirit is open and in air. So yeah, like today after speaking to you, I feel much more confident about my beliefs that I had as a young girl. And now I feel it's all very validated, and I was always on the right path, you know. So,
I'm glad. And I just hope that, you know, physical trainers and practitioners everywhere are, like you said, emotionally aware about, you know, the kind of people who are coming to their class, and even in general in life. Because, you know, I feel sad to think that, you know, because of a few insensitive or inappropriate remarks made by a practitioner, it is possible that they dissuade someone from taking to physical movement ever again, you know, because the power of words is such. So it would trouble me to think that, you know, a trainer just made a few statements thinking that that is motivation or that is probably the goal of the client. And you know, you end up making a person either hate their body or hate the practice in itself, you know, not wanting to go back. So I hope that people become a little more aware of their words, how they are speaking, who they are speaking to, and, you know, just try to be more aware about everything.
Yeah, just be more empathetic, because you never know why someone has gained weight. Like, I have a genetic history of diabetes in my family. Everyone
Absolutely.
In my family is chubby.
Absolutely.
Everyone. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and I mean,
exactly.
And, you know, this whole fat shaming culture, and, you know, feeling, I mean, I still struggle with body image issues. You know, when I'm on medication, I tend to put on weight. No, I can't stop taking my medication. It's something that I require to function on a daily basis. But a byproduct of that is that I do sometimes, you know, end up putting on weight. And then even now, even with all the awareness that I have and the information that I am armed with, I still sometimes end up feeling bad about how I'm looking, about my body, about this, about that. And you really never know someone's reasons for why they have lost weight or put on weight. And it's something that should, I think, as a community, we should just stop commenting on, you know. As long as people are moving because they like it and they're moving because they want to be healthy, I think that should be the be-all, end-all of, the, you know, the reason why someone's taking to physical movement. Weight is something, there are possibly a few benefits of having a leaner body as opposed to a heavier body. Maybe some people find a difference in flexibility levels. Like, that is something that happened for me. Also, carrying my own body weight was something that was harder when I was 10 kgs heavier. And I found that it was becoming less challenging when I lost weight. Again, everyone's reasons for losing weight or gaining weight are also different. So it's such a personal part of someone's life. It shouldn't be commented on, and I don't think it's something that even physical trainers, actually, if they want to approach the topic also, it should be done in a very respectful manner. It's not something that should be, you know, belittled or made fun of. That's highly inappropriate.
Yeah, I totally agree. And now I think somebody who grew up, I have a podcast on this, and it is 1 hour, 40 minutes long, because it's with a fellow big girl. Her name is Arminder. So Arminder and I, we both are like big girls, and, you know, we like, and I don't call myself like very plus size, because there are women who are actually plus size and I am somewhere in the middle. So taking their place and saying, oh, I know your struggle. I don't know their struggle. I still fit into a for L or XL, but I know there are people who are literally, they don't find clothes of their size in the market. So I will not say, you know, appropriate myself because I want to feel in a group together with them. I am just like them only. So they have their own struggles, and which I realize very, and I feel body neutrality is a concept that I feel I'm very comfortable with. I don't want to be body positive, but I'm okay with my body the way it is.
Right.
You know, that is the first step, I guess. Because when you grew up listening to people saying you, based on your body is how attractive you are, based on your body is how good clothes you get, it is very difficult to convince your inner child that, you know, okay, now times have changed. Now things have changed. You know, like, still, I have a twin sister who is very skinny, like very skinny. And till today, people meet us. It was just a couple of days ago, we met aunties who told us, you guys don't look alike at all. At all. They were like, you guys are not twins. Why you have so much weight difference? Same day we were coming back. In the lift, we met two little girls, and they were like, Didi, you both are twins. I mean, you guys are so similar. I mean, just the perspective of people.
Right.
It's so subjective. So, yeah, like, to everyone out there, like, find a trainer like Asavari. We'll definitely put her details. Put yourself in good hands when it comes to finding a therapist also.
Yes,
put yourself
absolutely.
In good hands, you know.
Absolutely.
Do not think that any trainer, like, just see the way she's speaking, just see the way I am talking. If first physical health is first, your brain comes first in your body, then comes your stomach.
Yes.
Because
your
brain needs to be comfortable first, then your
Definitely.
Gut can feel comfortable.
Definitely.
Right?
I agree.
Go with the order of things. Use your brain first.
It's very important.
Yeah. So coming to my favorite part of the podcast, tell us something about conscious breathing and impact it has. And I'll tell you why I chose this theme of the podcast. When I started with my mental health journey, it was through an Instagram page called The Antidote.
Mm-hmm.
So that page, Jova is the founder, and every, I think 2017 mein, he started this wave called Tell Me Where You Are, Tell Me What You're Doing, and then Tell Me What Your Thoughts Are. And he would just say, breathe, take a moment and remind yourself to breathe. And I didn't understand what impact it had until I started realizing that controlling your breath is like you're controlling your life.
Right.
If you can control your breath, you can control your life. So that is how that journey started for me. So why don't you tell us more about, because yoga is all about breathing and controlling.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, in many schools of yoga, the breath forms a very integral part of the movement, the physical practice as well. And, you know, there's a lot of emphasis on, as you are doing a certain type of movement, you are taking a certain type of breath. To the best of your abilities, how much ever of a harmony you can create, you try and create that. Now, just breath by itself is something that gives each one of us this feeling that we are alive. It's a very, very powerful, impactful essence of feeling alive. You know, we're breathing. Now, breathing with intention, or conscious breathing, as you very rightly put, is a technique that I look at where you kind of help to center your awareness on an activity. So that activity would be breathing. So you're bringing all of your awareness to one particular moment right now and just focusing on either the physical movement of your body as you're breathing, or you're just trying to focus on how your breath even feels, coming into your nostrils, moving out of your body. It's a grounding technique. You know, it helps us to focus on the present moment and kind of disengage with any kind of negative self-talk, even positive self-talk, any kind of self-talk, and just primarily focus on being, which I think is very important, because there are times, you know, we get really caught up with our day, with our emotions, the kind of work that we are doing. We forget that the day is getting out of our hand. We forget that, you know, every moment is to be enjoyed. Even in all the overwhelm, there are moments that we can take out for ourselves to kind of focus on, this is my time. This is what I'm doing at this moment. And it does help to bring a certain degree of stability to the mind at that point. It helps to bring about a certain level of calmness, because it is done with so much of focus, with so much of consciousness. So yes, breathing in an intentioned manner, breathing in a very conscious way, does have positive impacts, not just for the mind, but also for the body, you know, lowering of the heart rate, helping the body to cool down from inside. So there are physical benefits and mental benefits of conscious breathing exercise.
Yeah, and I, you know, sometimes I feel all your life makes sense when you see it backwards. I was very young. I was 12 years old. We were traveling in bus. I met this lady who was from the same town as my dad, and we were coming back to Bombay from Gujarat. And she was with Sri Sri Ravi Shankar Maharaj, and she was practicing in his camp. And, you know, she told me, you know, just keep breathing. And I was like, why? She's like, your breathing controls your thoughts. The number of breaths you take unconsciously is the number of thoughts you have unconsciously. And when you start breathing consciously, you start thinking consciously. And as a 12-year-old, it makes no sense.
Very interesting. Probably now it makes a lot more sense to you, as you know, opposed to as a little girl.
It does. And I felt like, you know, back then I wish that knowledge was, she just told me and I couldn't understand. And now I feel, but it always stayed in the back of my mind that maybe when I breathe, maybe I can control my thoughts. Okay, what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling, everything's become very, that is why when you, now that I prefer walking as my exercise is because no, there is no trainer to walk. We all know how to walk. We can do with the music, eyes are open, we are out in the nature, everything is fine.
Walking is an excellent form of just letting go, absolutely.
Yeah, and in Bombay, there is no space to do anything, like, there is no space. I've seen people play football on one side of the road, and other end people are playing cricket. Right. So yeah, now that I can, I think we can keep the theme of the podcast, you know, breathing and thinking, how interrelated they are. Yeah. So conclude what you were saying. So if you had to advise the listeners before we move on to exercising conscious breathing, what came up in the conversation, would you like to just add something to it, something you would tell, like to tell our listeners and everyone about yoga, about breathing, about being a mental health practitioner?
Well, I would say that, you know, I am somebody who does advocate for physical movement and health and well-being. So I would encourage every listener to make any kind of physical activity. It does not have to be yoga. Anything that you enjoy, try and inculcate it into a part of your daily routine. Even if you're doing it just 3 times a week, or for some people, they can do it 5 times or all days of the week. If it's a physical activity that you enjoy, please engage in it. A minimum of 20 to 30 minutes, a maximum of maybe an hour, hour and 15 minutes. But, you know, just making movement a part of everyday routine has so much of benefit. There are short-term benefits that you see instantaneously. You know, you finish a workout, you finish a yoga class, you'll be feeling really ready to go. Like, you're feeling energized, you're feeling good. There's a lot of, you know, pumped up serotonin. There are endorphins. You're feeling really good about everything. But the long-term benefits of just having physical movement, you know, your bones and joints stay healthier. You have a healthy heart. You have healthy muscles, a stronger spine. There are long-term benefits also of sticking to, you know, some kind of physical movement. And this is again coming from a very deeply personal space, but I have always failed miserably when I try to control my thought process, because it's something that I figured out over the years. The more I try to take control of it or I try to fight it, the harder it pushes back. And it's usually a negative process after that. You know, you have a lot of negative self-talk coming up and really kind of coming with force to the front of whatever I'm experiencing. So I think that when I'm exercising, or even when I'm doing, engaging in practices like conscious breathing, I try to focus on the physical activity. I try to let my mind go at that point of time. Even if I do have, you know, a situation where there's a lot of negative thought process just going on, or just generally a lot of mental activity, I just try to let it go. Like, okay, if it's flowing, let it flow. I try not to attach myself to the conversation that might be happening at the level of my mind. And I try to stick to the act of breathing itself. Because I think with time and practice, focusing on the breath is what has helped the mind to become quieter. I mean, I have failed at trying to quiet my mind by thinking about quieting my mind. That has not happened for me. So I've just, you know, tried to keep my awareness on the physicality and on the activity. So, and as a result of that, with months and months of practice, it has led to the mind automatically becoming more calm when I'm engaging in a physical activity. So that is something that I would encourage, that people make any exercise form that they enjoy a part of their life, because there are numerous benefits to having, you know, physical movement in your day.
Yeah, and just to add to what she's saying, that if you read evolutionary books like Sapiens or any such book, you will realize we are creatures of evolution and our brain is just thousands and crores of years old, and the body, the routine we have is not even 100 years old. So we are meant to move. We were farmers, tribes who would fight for survival, and from that your brain has just sit in front of screen for hours.
Yes. You know, the sedentary lifestyle has created so much of, it's not healthy for the body for very obvious reasons, but we don't realize that a sedentary lifestyle is also not very great for the mind. It's something that we end up forgetting, you know, and if we could just understand that there's such a beautiful correlation between the physical and the mental self, and we could try and create, because each one of us has different levels of how much we are willing to exercise every day. Do we even want to do it every day? What do I like? What do I not like? So I think kind of exploring that balance for each person, seeing that, okay, this physical activity makes me this happy, this doesn't make me that happy, and kind of figuring out a comfortable space where you are not just letting, not just exercising your body, but you're also letting your mind rest for some time. Because I believe, I have felt those effects, that when I'm exercising, I'm actually letting my mind rest, because I'm not thinking about anything other than the physical activity on which I'm focused. So I'm giving my mind like that additional opportunity to just let go, just relax. It's okay. Whatever is happening, let it keep happening in the background. So it's a wonderful opportunity to explore. And I hope that, you know, this work from home and the pandemic has not, made people completely detached from physical movement. I hope all of us somewhere find that motivation again to, whether it's in the house or out of the house, to just start and, you know, just start moving again. I hope we all kind of collectively decide to do that.
Yeah, and I totally agree, with that, you know, just move your body, like read as much as you can about it. Your brain, you feel you're in control of your brain, but you won't realize how much you are in control of your brain. Like, and start with walking if you feel you can't do anything, because walking needs no equipment. You might say yoga mat, ghar pe jagah nahi hai. But just go for a walk. You might
find trainers. You don't need a trainer. It's a brilliant form of exercise. Great cardio. It's wonderful. Walking is great. It's great.
Yeah. And I have read so many benefits because I needed that motivation to go.
Yes.
That, you know, when you walk, you create new brain cells.
Mm-hmm.
Your heart feels very pumped up. Oh, the whole body has exercise because your legs are moving, hands are moving, the torso is moving. And the best part is, on road, you will find so many new people every day. And it is amazing. And from somebody who has, like, both of us have fought mental health problems, we both have experienced it in such different ways and been on the different ends of spectrum. Like, I don't enjoy yoga so much because of the trainers I met, but she was introduced to it in a very soulful manner. Mm-hmm. So she does enjoy it, but at the end we are having the same conversation of encouraging others,
right?
So definitely, do that for yourself. Yeah. And I do walk because I like to eat a lot of junk.
Same here. I love any food you put in front of me, it will be eaten. So I think that's what, you know, we have this very beautiful life, you know, with us. And food is something that must be enjoyed. I don't think denying ourselves food, or it's such a pleasurable thing, you know, food is amazing. There's so much.
The only pleasure sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there are times for comfort food as well. And I think, I mean, I kind of see it as a balance, that because I'm eating certain kinds of food or consuming certain amount of sugar on a daily basis, I feel that I owe it to my physical body to carry out a certain amount of exercise. That is one part of it, because I feel that, okay, you know, I have had a great time eating, and I would like to also exercise my body for a certain time. That is a part of the reason why I think, you know, where food and, you know, exercise are where I tend to relate. But a huge part of why I engage in physical activity is because it helps me to maintain my sanity. So that is something that, you know, with whatever I have gone through, what I'm going through even right now, movement is very important. Playing with people, going out of just being in fresh air, no matter what the activity is that I might be doing at that time, it helps me to feel mentally stronger, mentally healthier. And that is, I think, you know, for me, that is reason enough. Whether I'm eating junk, not eating junk, what I'm eating, it actually becomes a secondary reason. It is for my mental well-being that I exercise. So it is something that has a very, very high priority on my list.
And whatever misery that you're having right now, it's because maybe you're thinking about the future too much, and maybe because you're thinking about the past too much. But present moment has no misery ever.
It's a wonderful space to be. Connect with the present moment in that way.
So difficult, no? Like,
it is. Every day it's a different experience trying to connect with the present. Every day is different. So some days it's very easy. Some days, so how much ever I push myself, it's a challenge. I'm not able to do it.
Yeah.
So then you have to be patient with yourself.
Yeah,
you have to be patient that they just let go. It's okay, I'm not being able to do it. No problem. So yeah, just each day is a different experience.
That's why babies are so happy, because they have no future to worry. Like, past unka hai nahi kuch.
They're
always happy.
In the present moment. Very engaged.
We have to go back to that phase where we are in the present and just like making the most out of it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Why don't you tell us some tricks or some, let us go through one calmful breathing, if you can give instructions to our audience for that.
Sure. So Priyanka, you can do it along with me. So I'm like, I'll be demonstrating it to you, but for the listeners, they can go along with us. So wherever you might be sitting, just sit in a comfortable position, however you want to keep your legs. And you can keep your spine straight, either using some kind of furniture or wall support, or even by itself. Now, for anyone who is struggling with their mental health, I would advise you that you can continue to keep your eyes open at your own discretion only. As you know, if you are feeling comfortable, should you close your eyes. During the practice, at any time, if you feel uncomfortable, please open your eyes. Now, you can take your left hand and place it somewhere near your heart, and the right hand somewhere on your belly. Right? So we're connecting with two aspects of our internal processes, with our heartbeat and with the pace of breathing. Now, I am choosing to keep my eyes open because I find that to be more beneficial for me. And I'm just connecting with greenery around me. I'm looking out the window. I'm looking at the plants in my room. Now, the first thing that we'll do is we'll check how we are breathing. So when you inhale slowly, check if your belly and your chest are expanding, because your system is filling up with air. And while you exhale, your chest and your belly contract, they move in, all the air is moving out of your body. This is all that there is to this technique of conscious breathing. You can choose either to focus on the physical movement of your stomach and chest, or you can keep your eyes open, look at your surroundings. You can even choose to focus on the act of breathing itself. Feel the air moving into your system, then feel the air exiting your system. Each breath taken with intention, taken with complete awareness, And we try and enjoy each and every breath, whether it's an inhalation or an exhalation. We try to calm down our breathing, making it as slow and as gentle as we can. Check your own comfort level. Now, very gently, you can join your palms together. Rub the palms nicely. And just give a little bit of heat to your eyes, to your face and brain. And then you can let go. So this was a small snippet or an idea of how conscious breathing can take place. One of the many techniques that people enjoy. But this is one example of intentional breathing.
Amazing. That was amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh my God, this was amazing. The whole session, I learned so much. A big part of my past got a closure where I always struggled with that. Why wasn't I able to continue? And my dad keeps telling me go to yoga, but I can ask him to listen to the podcast now. That right now it is difficult for me for this practice, but soon I will do it. I really like yoga. It's amazing. So thank you so much for that. And everyone who is listening, I hope you take something out of it. Be kind to yourself, you know, like you can always, when you go for, you can always ask people when you go for training and everything, that how important it is for them, how they look at the body. So even you feel comfortable being trained by them, right? So do that. And if someone wants to learn from yoga from you, how can they do that?
They can contact me via personal messages, either on Instagram. My personal handle, the page of my yoga and mental health advocacy is called Portions of Peace. And they can, message me on that privately. Some people have my phone number, they reach out that way, or even through LinkedIn. People can reach out to me on personal messages on LinkedIn as well. And then I take the conversation forward with them from that point of time.
Amazing. I think I'll get in touch with you soon about this. Like from home, learning from home is quite difficult, but I'm sure we'll figure something out.
Absolute
and
pleasure.
If you want to, if you want to reach to me, you know, my name is Priyanka. I didn't say it in the beginning because everybody knows me by now. So many have podcasts, but I'm Priyanka. I'm a law student based in India. And so thank you so much. Come back again for the new episode. Take care of yourselves and just take care of yourself.
Thank you for having me, Priyanka. It's been a great conversation.
Likewise. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.